Freestyling the anchor, I'm write that shit. Freestyling the anchor, anchor. Freestyling the anchor, I'm write that shit. Freestyling the anchor. Hey, hey.
Yo, what's up?
This is Ergo.
Ah, it is indeed.
That felt good.
Mm-hmm.
For those who don't know, what we do here is reshape culture for the more liberatory and creative. And it feels good to be back in our flow here, putting out long-form conversations with organizers, movement workers, culture workers, people working to reshape our world.
And so it's good to be back. We're about to be putting out a lot of episodes and conversations, so stay tuned and lock in with us. But this is a special one. It's always a special opportunity to connect to organizers, especially through the campaigns that are directly aimed at making significant structural change. And we got that here with Tynetta and Brian from the Bring Chicago Home campaign.
Yeah, so the Chicago municipal election is coming up on March 19th. Early voting is available now. And on the ballot in this election is what has been termed Bring Chicago Home. We'll get into a lot of the details, the importance, the what does it make possible in this conversation. But I think it's really important that y'all know early voting is available now. Election day is on the 19th. Make sure you go and vote to Bring Chicago Home. We have the link to find your voting info if you live in the city of Chicago in the show notes. And get in tune with all the organizing happening at bringchicagohome.org.
So in this conversation, we talk about some of the direct experiences of the organizers, some of the political history that got us here, and this really messed up lawsuit that the real estate lobby has levied to try to obfuscate the process, to try to stop legislation before folks have a chance to vote on it. And that could be really confusing. So it's important to know that the referendum is still on the ballot.
Yeah, I got confused. I saw that headline. I was like, oh, damn.
They got us. No, they did not get us. And if you're not in the city or if you're listening to this in the future, we still think it's an important conversation to learn about some of the mechanics and experiences of how grassroots organizing operates.
So yeah, go to bringchicagohome.org. Make sure you know where you're registered to vote, where your early voting site is. You know, stay tuned with us. Subscribe to Ergo wherever you get your podcasts. Check out Respair Production and Media at respairmedia.org or at Respair Media. And yeah, I think with that, let's hop into it with Tynetta and Brian of Bring Chicago Home.
Let's get it. All right, everybody, we are here. It's actually time to get to work. We got some folks who are really on the ground leading one of the most important efforts right now. For those who are hearing this in real time, we got the Bring Chicago Home ordinance coming up on the ballot imminently. And we have with us from the Bring Chicago Home campaign, Brian Rogers and Tynetta Hill Muhammad.
Hey.
So it has to because Chicago should be brought home. It's an exciting time. So we're gonna get into the campaign. We're gonna get into, you know, some of y'all's experience that led you there and what you've learned while being in this effort and fight. But we have to start our conversation as we always do, and that's with a two-part question. And that question is centered around time. So define this time as you will, whether that's this day, hour, this season, this lifetime. But in this time, how is the world treating you and how are you treating the world?
I think I want to start that one off.
Go ahead.
How's the world treating me? Oh, well, it's been business as usual. And what I mean by that is over the years, all the systemic practices, they're the same. You know, it just has a different face. As far as me treating life, wow. It seems like, you know, I'm getting treated more than I'm treating. Every corner that I turn around, every time that I turn around, after I think one battle is getting a little better, well, you know, old life comes to show you. We got another trick for you.
How about you, Tynetta?
I feel like I'm in this time of transmutation, taking what the world has given me and that frustration, that sadness sometimes, you know, and I'm trying to move it into action. So that's really what has brought me here to the Bring Chicago Home campaign, but also just what influences me to be in all the little things that I'm in. Sometimes I feel like I have my hands in more things than I have hands on my body.
I love that. I'm picturing, you know, those like the grocery store grabbers, you know, where like you extend up to the top shelf. You just got like 15 of those coming out different directions.
Yes, literally. It's like five in my side and maybe one out my foot. But yeah, I'm just trying to take every day as it comes, you know, and it's been unseasonably warm. So I'm like, yes, sun, but also like, damn, global warming at the same right. time. Ice caps melting.
The conundrum. It's like the ice cap in the Jewel parking lot is melting. So I know the global ice caps have to be in trouble because these garbage piles of dust and snow usually last to mid-April.
Right.
But let's frame for folks listening who may have heard nothing about Bring Chicago Home and need to be activated, who may be out of town and are just looking at what's going on in Chicago, or my favorite listener, the listener from the future, who is listening from a future time back on our historic past. So for folks who may not have any frame of reference of Bring Chicago Home, what is this campaign and why is it so important in this time?
Well, I'll start off by saying this. Bring Chicago Home, it's about creating affordable housing, places for people to live, literally sleep in, have something to call their own. You stick the key through the door, it's your apartment, it's your home. That's what we're talking about. We're also talking about the services that go along to meet the people's needs, from substance abuse, mental health abuse, employment training, educational training, all of those things that would make up people's everyday needs, childcare, providing that service for those people, that when they get their apartment or their house, that they'll be able to maintain it and stay inside of it. It's one thing to give a person something, but what good is it if they can't keep it? It's just like the old parable. If I give a man a fish, he eats for one day. If I teach a man to fish, he eats for a lifetime. That's in turn what this is. We know it takes money. It has to come from somewhere. Everything is taxed. Everything that we buy and take for granted on a day-to-day basis, we pay taxes on. Some pay a lot less than others. Some are pretty good at not paying it at all. And Bring Chicago Home is one of those measures where we say, hey, why can't 7% pay just a tiny bit more? Just a tiny bit more. Not a mountain slide, just a tiny bit more to make it fair and equitable for people who are experiencing homelessness, need a place to live. Bring Chicago Home.
Mm-hmm. Essentially, Bring Chicago Home is this coalition that's grappling with the slogan of like housing being a human right. So it's not something that we can just say, but it's something that we have to put actionable steps behind. And so this coalition has been around for a long time, for the past 6 years, and has been fighting for an increase in the real estate transfer tax for homes over $1 million. And so this is a one-time, that happens already when you purchase a home or a property. In Chicago, it's a flat rate, but not everybody can afford $1 million property or a house, right? Not a mansion, not a corporate building, not a portfolio of offices, not your block. You know, somebody else is purchasing that and then raising your rent up. But Bring Chicago Home is saying that, yeah, we want to decrease the real estate transfer tax for folks purchasing a home under $1 million. And for those who can afford over $1 million, yeah, let's pay a little bit more, so that we can have this dedicated revenue stream for folks who are experiencing housing insecurity and homelessness. So just grateful to be a part of the action steps.
All right. I want to test my listening comprehension. Can I say back to the class what I just heard? And I'm cheating because I've studied and I've learned some of this before. So I'll be a little honest about that. But from my understanding, there is a vote on a ballot that is basically naming or asking for there to build towards an ordinance for three things. One, an increase in a one-time real estate transfer tax. So not a consistent tax, but a one-time tax on properties sold over $1 million. That's one thing that it's doing. Second thing that it's doing is doing the opposite or the inverse, a decrease of a real estate transfer tax for homes under $1 million. So for homeowners of a modest to, you know, a little bit more than modest size, actually saving some tax dollars. And then a third thing is taking that pot of money and directly putting that into resources for affordable housing and services for people experiencing homelessness.
You got 3 out of 3 points right there.
Hey, this sounds like it is under the, what I like to call the slate of common sense ordinances. This makes a lot right? of sense and feels like what we should be doing. All right.
Right?
Common sense.
Not always that common, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's one step in so many steps, right? The whole idea of the ordinance is one that it can't be changed. So the language on the ballot is very laid out. This is going to go towards funding housing services for folks who are experiencing homelessness. And there are 68,000 folks in the city of Chicago who are experiencing housing insecurity or doubled up or tripled up. And that means that they're living on top of each other with other folks in the home. And the majority of those folks are Black and brown. In a city that's already hyper-segregated, they don't have access to housing. They don't have access to the resources they need to stay housed, et cetera, et cetera. So it feels like a no-brainer. And yet we have folks who are in opposition to it. And unfortunately, people don't even know that it's on the ballot. So make sure you go out March 19th.
Make sure you pay attention because it's on that ballot. It's the last question on there, the only question on there.
So I want to stay there because, you know, we're talking now just a couple weeks before the day of the election, and early voting will be open across the city by the time this comes out. And we're also talking a few days after a challenging moment in this, like, as you mentioned, you know, 6-year-long coalition and really active, long, vibrant campaign. I think this is maybe a good opportunity to just correct a little misinformation around some of the news that came out about how this will live on the ballot. So could you just talk a little bit about what happened, what didn't happen, and what people need to know about where this will live on their ballots when they go into the booth?
Sure, absolutely. We have been negotiating Bring Chicago Home with the mayoral office administration since Mr. Johnson has taken office, just to negotiate to get the terms right, marginal tax rate advisory board, things of that nature, to wrap this up so we could place it on the ballot. We finally got that. Right now, had a legal stall, you know, unfavorable ruling temporarily, but that doesn't mean it stops the campaign. It doesn't mean it stops the question from being on the ballot. So we want to make that absolutely clear that voters, when they vote, they can still vote for this measure. It's in the appeal process. We don't want that momentum to drive people away. You got deep pockets who wish to tie up things in the legal system. You know, one of the tools that deep pockets always use when they don't want something to happen or to become law is to tie it up in the courtrooms. And this is just a good example of it. We had a decision that was made for whatever reason, because she gave no reason. So as it stands, it's still on the ballot. It's still in full force. And we're waiting and going through our appeal process. And we're confident that that this measure can push on through off March 19th.
It's disappointing, but really just expect it. We've seen this type of voter suppression historically. These real estate folks, they came together, organized themselves and said, we are going to go up against the Board of Elections and push against this ability for voters to vote on popular policies that are interested in helping disenfranchised communities in the interest of our own money, our own profit, and our own ability to continue to own the communities of these folks that we're constantly disenfranchising. So I'm personally not surprised by what is happening. It's unfortunate, but I do know that for sure people are supportive of this measure. And as a person who's canvassing on the South Side, I've had really amazing conversations with folks about the impact of homelessness and housing insecurity, not only on them like personally, but people in their lives, and the importance of not just recognizing this as an issue that is of an individual, but an issue that is societal and that we need to be impacting our society's understanding of what happens to put a person in the position to be homeless or housing insecure, and how we can really be supportive of folks.
Yeah, I want to follow that pivot to the more important conversation that you just uplifted of like the human weight and consequence of our economy, of our housing that has been dominated by market dynamics in ways that don't serve folks. Everybody has at least a first or secondhand degree relationship to this epidemic. And even if not, it is just so present in our home and in our city and in our community that it is really unavoidable. But I want to actually dig in with y'all a little bit more of like how you came into the campaign, why it felt important for you to spend your time talking to dozens and hundreds of people. What brought you to Bring Chicago Home? And what have been some of the experiences that have had an impact on you since you've been in the campaign?
Well, I heard about the campaign, and at first I was like, whew, I already got so many things on my plate. Can I do it? But I did a lot of research, and I thought about my personal experience with being doubled up or homeless. I was a young person around 20, 21, and I experienced being housing insecure on the west side of Chicago. And I just never want anyone to experience that. I didn't know where resources were for me. I remember walking outside in the dark where you usually catch the 88 bus in Austin. Like, dang, how did I get here? I'm a student at UIC at the time in undergrad, and I couldn't afford to continue to go to school, and they didn't have any other options for me. So I talked to everybody. I talked to the dean. I talked to everybody. Everybody got an email from me because I'm not afraid to email you.
You were canvassing, you know, door to door.
Early.
Yeah.
Early. I said, I need some help. And it felt like I didn't have a place to turn to, and I had to dig myself out of that hole. I just imagine the young folks who experience that on the daily basis, who don't have the social supports that I was blessed to have to help me move out of that space and move into a space of wellness. And yeah, so I came into the campaign just knowing that I had a personal experience, and also reflecting on the life that I have now and how grateful I am to be where I am. And also wanted to make sure that the opportunity exists for Black and Brown Chicagoans who predominantly and mostly experience homelessness in the city of Chicago. That's what brought me here.
So me personally, of course, growing up, I've witnessed it. I never gave too much thoughts about, you know, because my relatives stayed with somebody else or my friends stayed with somebody else, other sorts about being doubled up. I never knew what all of that meant. But as I got older, my troubles with the prison industrial complex, the machine, AKA the plantation, going in and out, every time that I got out, you know, I didn't have a place to stay. I was wondering why, you know, I kept returning and everything like that. But the bottom question was, you know, why does this keep happening to me? In spite of all the tools and stuff that I had and gave, all the things that I learned, all the hard, earnest tries that I used, I had to dig down deep and ask me, what is that something that keeps making me come back? You know, this last time when COVID was going around, a bright light cut on in my head because I had enough time to really sit back and think. And it was being homeless. It was the point that every time that I got out, you know, I didn't have anywhere to go. So whether it was shelter-wise or whether it was staying with someone, it was always the looming feeling of, man, I got to hurry up and get this. I got to hurry up and get that. Didn't have no job. You're trying to make up for lost time and move out of somebody else's house before they put your stuff out, before they tell you, hey, look, you're using up the milk too much. Hey, or we need money. You sleeping here tonight, or we need some money. You know what I'm saying? This is due. No, you can't have no company, you know, like, you know, three or four, but it's the house. You know what I'm saying? So when I got out this time at Union Station, and I just looked, and something was different in the city of Chicago. And I'm just looking at the dynamics of people that was just walking around. And it wasn't the bias picture of people suffering in my head. It was everybody I was seeing black, white, Hispanic, whatever race you want to call it. I was seeing a lot of people on the street walking around with nowhere to go. And then on top of that, the age difference didn't matter. It used to be a time where you say, oh, okay, well, this is reserved for the old man that stays under whack or dry. No, it was people that could have been my kids or younger. And I was like, what's going on here? I had the opportunity to finally get somewhere that provided housing while you got on your feet and took care of everything else. They didn't ask you for a dollar. And it seems like the more and more that I started coming out, the more and more I started seeing it. Go downtown, start seeing people just laying out on the street, just literally laying out on the street. Disabled people in the wheelchairs, mothers in tow with kids, young, bright-minded individuals, individuals that got the potential to be anything they want from that age forward. And they're walking around and they're homeless. And there is a need to address problems that are going on with them. And I was like, oh, no. No, something got to change here. What's going on? We as, you know, a city, as a community, as a society, something is failing. I know we failed. We got our shortcomings and all. I know that. But this is too much. This is too much.
As I hear you share that experience, one, thank you for providing that perspective from such a, you know, honest place. But two, it's like, you're right. There has been two unavoidable phenomenon that you recognize in the city if you've been alive the last 10 to 15 years, especially if you've been around before that to kind of notice the difference. Downtown, South Loop, West Loop, you've seen dozens and dozens and dozens of cranes in the sky simultaneously, right? Like, we are seeing these glass, shiny looking buildings popping up tenfold, it seems. So there is development of some sort happening. There is commerce, there is economy that's being built around space maintenance, around buildings, around housing. But and at the same time, there has been an increase of people who visibly have nowhere to go. Like, we know homelessness to look like a number of forms of precarity and double up and over. But then in addition, like, people on the street, you know, tent cities and encampments as survival mechanisms that were not a regular sight or really a sight that was familiar in my childhood. And, you know, I'm just 31. I'm not that old. And I think what the, you know, the ordinance speaks to is that these things are not unrelated, right? Like, at the same time that we are seeing this hyper development, we are seeing this underdevelopment of people's ability to exist in community and to have adequate shelter. And like, that is pouring out in the streets in ways that you cannot avoid. And so I just want to like echo back what I'm hearing from your story of like, that is something that folks who have been paying attention, it has been unavoidable to recognize as dynamics in our city.
Yeah. They're one of the richest cities in the country.
World, yeah.
In the world, look, get me right.
Yeah. What's really different about this time is we went through COVID, and I watched it from a cell downstate in Illinois, and I watched COVID on a TV screen. But I seen how things transform. This was the fallout. Mm-hmm. You mean it was here all the time? But guess what? We was doing a good job of hiding it, wasn't we?
You know. Of course, like you're saying, the cracks be more visibly seen. And we saw like an unprecedented, at least in our lifetimes, like transfer of wealth.
Yes.
In these same 3 years that we're talking about, which there's the things that it exposed, and then there's the things that were furthered and created. And so I want to talk a little bit about like what y'all have learned doing this work about where money lives in this city. Because to Dame's point, like, it's not just downtown. There has been, in certain ways, like massive investment in certain sectors of the, especially within real estate, but of the economy of Chicago. And, you know, when we talk about invest, divest around defund, like, this is what we're talking about, is there are things that get invested into. And so I'm curious for y'all, what have you learned about the process of how it gets determined where the money goes through doing this work?
I can tell you pretty good. I mean, that neighborhoods that have typically thrived are still thriving, but the neighborhoods that typically have been divested over the last, I would say, half of my lifetime, 25 years or so, that I saw from the fallout from the 60s all the way up until 2000. I witnessed the crack epidemic, all of that. And the neighborhoods haven't been invested in. They have been left alone. I've also had the chance to see all those housing complexes around Chicago get destroyed, tore down, and people get thrown out, literally, saying you have the option to come back, but when? And then when you do get that option to come back, can you afford it? I don't think so. So then you get the gentrification of the neighborhoods. It's just like over here by the United Center. This is where I stay. It's a stop being built on Damon Avenue. There was no stop from Ashland all the way to California. But you know why? Because the neighborhood doesn't look the same. How many of that would be affordable housing? How many of those areas have suffered and been left alone for a long time like that? So once the property value drops and the land is cheap, guess who comes in to buy it? Big money grip developer. He comes in, he says, yeah, thanks for the property. Now I'm going to build it. You can't live in it. You know, if you were lucky to keep or hold on to your property through generations, just say, you know, mom's or grandma, you know, had a house or a building. Okay, she's going on now and the kids are ready and they can fortunately take over it. Yeah, cool. But that's not what typically happened in a lot of communities on the South and West sides where blacks and browns live. You know, a lot of them got displaced, misplaced, or for whatever reasons. You know, we can go anywhere from education, closing the schools, to mental health issues, to guns, to drugs. We can name all of that, which have plagued and destroyed the communities. And once after that fallout, like I said, you got the developers that come in that keep building. When they get finished with this city, you think it's really going to hurt some type of market? This city is going to be a magnet. People are going to be running to Chicago. Matter of fact, they already are.
I think in the theme of the Invest Divest, we have the Chicago Police Department with an increasing budget, almost $2 billion. And then we have homelessness prevention services. I think the budget is about $20 million in one of the largest cities in the country, right? So why don't people have access to housing? Why do people not have access to the resources that they need? And why are we continuously investing into the over-policing of people who are housing insecure, who are homeless, who are experiencing crisis, instead of investing into their livelihood and their access to being well? So it truly is a question of who do you care for? What is your morality? What are you thinking about when you are doing this type of work every single day? Is the fact that you can walk down the street and see a person who is homeless or housing insecure every day?
I want to get into some of the learnings and evaluations from being in the work and doing the campaign, because, you know, kind of part of our theory of change, and we didn't create this, but like, is that, you know, transformation happens most for those who are participating in struggle, right? Like, they are the people that we are hoping to benefit, and there are people we're hoping to convince, but those who show up are the ones who are going to be the most moved and the most transformed. And so y'all, as folks who've shown up, and particularly through, again, our theory of change, is that power and knowledge is built through relationship and through communication and through dialogue. And so as organizers, basically what your job to do is to talk to as many people as possible about the political issues shaping the world and shaping their lives. And like, that's not what most people do day-to-day life. Most people just like walk past people or say, how you doing? Or talk about the football score or the weather or whatever. And so for y'all, whether it's through canvassing, whether it's through the house parties that's happening, teach-ins, you know, coalition meetings, like just in talking to people about this issue, what has come up for you? What are the learnings? What are the evaluations that you hold having had this conversation with many people?
Yeah, I'm a student at UIC. I'm getting my master's right now in public health. And when we think about public health, when we think about health that people have every single day, we think about the physical body. We don't think about all the things of our well-being that aren't physical. And housing is one of those things. And so when people don't have access to housing, when they don't have access to transportation, when they don't have access to just funds to be living in a thrivable way, we are actively harming folks. We are taking away from their fullest potential of self. I'm learning so much as a student, things that I have known, but now I'm able to quantify them in a different way. I'm able to assess them. I'm able to do those survey methods, mm-hmm. qualitative and quantitative methods.
Both qual and quant. Let's go.
I'm kind of scared of the quant. I'm kind of scared of the quant, but I'm also learning the value of a story, right? But just talking to people as an organizer, you have to be embedded in the culture and understanding in order to do so, right? You can have a conversation with whoever, right? But the impact of it is when a person knows that you're from where they're from, when they know that you have a lived experience and identity like them. And what I've really learned was really like impacted and transformed me is one, just how much I love Chicago and love Chicagoans and just love the experience of getting to know people, not just to push them towards an action step, which again, March 19th, but two, know their lived experience, know their lived identity, and know their cultural self as an individual, and know what they care about and what's important to them. We got to speak to people in the language that they understand and the cultural connection of what impacts them and what drives them to action and yeah, what they care about. So I'm really learning what it means to figure that out, one, for myself, but then two, for the people that I'm talking to and I'm canvassing. And I think that is really transforming me in this work.
That's beautiful. What about you, Brian? How has participation been transformative?
Oh, man. It comes full circle for me. I love the city of Chicago. You know, I've been in different settings, different environments, different neighborhoods, went to school with multiracial background, magnet schools, Kenwood. I've had a chance to go out of town for college and, you know, come back. And so I've been in a lot of different settings, in other words, from the hood to Mag Mile. So you follow my drift. So with that, you meet a lot of different people. And until I tell somebody my story, they never would tell that, hey, man, this guy here, he's born in South Shore, you know, 79th and Jeffrey. He's got a record. You know, he's smart. He's a smart guy, but he's got a record. But you would never know that until I told you that. You would never know that I experienced homeless the way that I did. You would never know that I've seen suffering from systemic practices all the way up to, like I say, downtown and back and forth. But just meeting those people and getting a chance to hear their story, share your story, see what the concerns are, the likenesses, to know that, hey, guess what? Some of the same concerns you got on the Mag Mount, they got on 63rd and Cottage Grove. But you wouldn't know that because you're too focused on the differences. Why are you focusing on that? Just know that you got some common things that's going to happen to you in your everyday life, and you do too. Right is right, wrong is wrong. You see somebody suffering, or if they land on the ground, what would you do naturally? Pick up the phone. Hey, this person, call an ambulance. You need an ambulance? You okay? Not just walk by people, acting like they don't exist, acting like they're not human. Since when did that become cool? That's what drives me to organizing. That's what I get a sense of fulfillment. When something is broke, it needs to be fixed. You don't sit up and let it keep being broke till it's unfixable. There is no solution but to destroy it. So is that what you're saying? You want this to be destroyed? People to be destroyed? When you're leaving them out to the point that you're leaving them out to now and not doing anything for them, that's what you're essentially saying. You're equating their life has no value. And so how can we count ourselves as greatest country on earth?
I let that one go a long time.
You know, how can we sit up and say that? You know what I mean? Yeah. And we got we got the means to fix it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying? No, other people probably looking at us like, yeah, they is crazy in America.
No, for
they
sure.
They fix the problem and they won't even fix it.
Yeah.
in talking to people, are there things that you've heard that have stuck with you or that keep coming up in a way that are like illuminating?
Yeah, I had a really interesting conversation on The Doors. We found out together that he could vote even though he was a person who was incarcerated. Brian, you were talking about your reentry, how we don't prepare people for the world and then we throw them into the world that doesn't have the resources that they need. So I was happy to have that conversation with him and say, hey, you should go out and vote. He said, I'll tell my wife. And I said, but you can do it too. He was like, oh, I didn't know. I said, yes, you can. We found this polling place and it was just a really illuminating, really exciting. It brought some joy to me. And it just let me know that there are so many things that are interconnected that we are fighting for when we address housing. We are not just addressing like the physical aspect of people having a roof over their head, but their ability to access jobs, their ability to create a livelihood for themselves. I was just really grateful to meet him and meet all the folks that I've met on The Doors and hear their stories and just compare them to my own. And it's unfortunate that the stories that we hear, they may be different in some ways, but they have the same message. And it's that I didn't know where to go. I didn't know who to call. I didn't know where the resources were. This opportunity is for folks to really invest in this dedicated revenue stream that will fund these services for folks who are experiencing homelessness and housing insecurity. So just really passionate about that.
Yeah. To that interconnection that you just named, you know, if we're viewing Bring Chicago Home as kind of like a nexus or an entry point in things being done differently, let's do some imagining 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the line. Like, what do you think having this like dedicated, moving toward holistic pathway to provide resources and housing for people who are struggling make possible for everything else?
Yeah, I truly believe that funding and structures for folks who are experiencing homelessness and housing insecurity who are doubled up, creating these services is a public safety issue. People are concerned about their neighborhoods. They're concerned about their block. They're concerned about the things that are happening in their communities. And if we make sure that folks have access to the resources that they need, where housing is fundamental to that, then we are creating the opportunity for us to imagine and see safety in ways that we have never seen before in the city of Chicago. There are too many desolate, destroyed, torn down buildings on the south and west side of Chicago for there to be homeless people in the city. What does it take to invest money to build those places? What is it? There's too many nonprofits. Come on. Now we're going to get real spicy in the city of Chicago for there to be people who don't have what they need, right? And we know the nonprofit industrial complex is this whole idea of privatizing social supports. What does it mean for us to pay taxes? What does it mean for us to be invested into our city every single day and then not have the things that we need? And the thing that we do have, which is proven to not work, is policing. And so why can't we imagine something different? Why can't we envision a future where instead of investing in the over-policing or criminalization of folks, we are actually investing in people's access to resources and people's access to housing and people's access to food? I shouldn't have to walk 5 miles to go to the nearest grocery store. I shouldn't have to sleep on the couch of my friend's house. I shouldn't have to leave out of prison or jail and not have the things that I need. We shouldn't have prisons or jails in general, but you know, I shouldn't have to have that happen, right? So I just think that housing is that first step. I really hope that folks come out, they vote, and they don't just vote on March 19th, but they come out and volunteer. They come knock on some doors, they tell their friend. Y'all ever heard of vote tripling? Okay. So when you go tell your homie, you go tell your comrade, you tell them, hey, you need to go do this thing. And then beyond voting, like we have serious and real conversations with people in our lives. Because I know there's folks who are like, voting is not it for me. And I'm like, well, then what are you doing outside of that? If you're not going to do the vote, that's cool. But what else are you going to do? You know, how are we really addressing and being in the community relationships with people? So I think housing is that first step. I truly do.
In addition to the structural reality of what these funds that are allocated directly towards addressing homelessness and providing affordable housing can offer, I think this political moment is a real opportunity for us to do some collective learning. In my time, organizing is usually primarily around addressing police violence and the impacts of incarceration at every turn, whether it's Ferguson, whether it's Freedom Square, whether it's at trying to do art classes at Breathing Room, whether it's the defund campaign, whether it's working with freed survivors of carceral torture, in anywhere that we are trying to work, especially work with impacted people to address the system, the precarity of people's living and housing situation comes up in a way that destabilizes our real potential to organize, right? So that's just been a reality of interconnected, like no matter what issue we're fighting, the issue of housing comes up because the people that we are fighting with and for, housing is kind of precarious at a crisis level. But then also what we look and see is that at every issue we're fighting, whether it's availability of mental health clinics, whether it's public education in charter schools, whether it's the Bruce Rauner campaign or the Paul Vallis campaign, that the real estate lobby is the funds at the side of these right-wing harmful political thrusts that we find ourselves always on the defense of. And so the fact that those things are ever present, I think this moment is just so clear and just how sneaky they are. So one, they got people reporting that this got taken off the ballot. This ruling did not take it off the ballot, if I'm correct. And I came to the end of the Bring Chicago Home House Party last night. And what I learned is they sued not the city or not the campaign, but the Board of Elections, which is an impartial body. And the suit was this like odd rule that says you can't have separate unrelated issues crammed together into one ballot.
Log rolling.
Right. Log rolling. And so what they're claiming is because the question asks, should property tax be increased for over a million and property tax be decreased for under a million? They're saying that those are two separate issues that can't be connected or related on the ballot, which was just like doesn't make logical sense, but also it just shows like the boldness and the lengths they'll take to undercut movement instead of holding what democracy wants or contributing to like the vision that people have for their home or for their community and city. And so, yeah, I just wanted to like name that like the way that y'all have been using this campaign really, I think, has made clear like who the real target is. Like, we know the FOP sucks a lot, and then we know like these trolls on Twitter, and that's pretty much it. And but like behind that, in between that, on top of all of that, and where the millions and billions of dollars is coming from is really the real estate lobby that controls the city of Chicago and, more importantly, controls the State House and controls Springfield. And it's like we live in a country where there is more vacant housing than there is people who need a place to stay.
Mm-hmm. Free to land, free to people.
And come out on March 19th. We'll have the info for where to find your polling place, including your early polling spots, in the show notes. Is there any other info that folks should find, any other ways that the campaign would like to be found?
Yeah, go to bringchicagohome.org. You can vote March 19th, but, you know, vote early if you can, because then you can volunteer on the 19th, right? There you go. Or you can get a mail-in ballot.
And please, I don't know if you guys can see this real clear, but this has been circulating around. It's a thing that the real estate developers are sending to people's homes where it crosses out transfer tax. And it says property tax referendum designed to confuse you into voting for a new property tax. Chicagoans are smarter than that. And they're sending it to people. Now, if you catch it and you look at it, notice the date. That's on one of the newspapers, which comes out like March 3rd. And, you know, it's like, okay, what do you guys do? Did you guys time travel and put this out? You know what I'm saying? If you look at a little...
They're putting stuff out in the future?
Yeah, it's back to the future.
All right, future listeners, y'all got to... This is out of our hands. Y'all are in the future. Y'all got to go fight this.
So you see all the tricks that they pulling out the bag? You know what I'm saying? Keep ducking till you can vote yes on the poll.
And it means that y'all are doing your job well if they have to move their resources that they'd rather hoard anyway into doing
absolutely
into spending money on lawsuits and misinformation. That shows how valuable this can be.
Yeah. Last night we said organized people versus organize money. Absolutely. Where to organize people. So yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I deeply appreciate the two of you, one, for, of course, being here and helping us get into the nuts and bolts of this, but also just for the days and weeks and months of active organizing around this. I know that work is tiring, and electoral work building toward a particular day weighs heavy. And so just so deeply appreciative of y'all's time and energy.
Thank you so much.
We appreciate you having us and providing a platform where we can get out and dispel all the myths and all the lies. And tell people the truth about what's happening with us.
Punto.
Absolutely. Of course. And we're gonna be back on the air continuing to do that, reshaping culture for the more liberatory and creative.
Much love to the people.
Peace.
Peace.